The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome back to the Feminist Book Club podcast, a show for dangerous, well-read women. Each week, we explore literature and media through a feminist lens as one small way to reclaim our time, our books, and our stories. Let's get started. Welcome back, everyone. Renee Powers here, and we are back with another excellent interview. Today's guest is KJ Dell'Antonia, author of The Chicken Sisters. I loved this book so much, and honestly, this conversation with KJ just deepened the feelings I already had for this book and its characters. If you're a fan of small town stories, sister stories, food competition shows, or just reality television in general, this book is a treat just for you. And thank you for sticking with us as we work through some behind-the-scenes changes over here. You'll be getting lots of author interviews over the next few weeks, and then you'll hear some brand new voices to this podcast who'll be coming to the show with some of their own segments and brilliant ideas and collaborations. I can't wait for you to meet everyone. But for now, enjoy today's interview.
Hi, everyone. Today, I am talking with KJ Dell'Antonia. Wow, we have struggled with that name a lot. Dell'Antonia, KJ Dell'Antonia, is the former editor of Motherlode and current contributor to the New York Times, as well as the author of How to Be a Happier Parent. She lives with her family on a small farm in Lyme, New Hampshire, but retains an abiding love for her childhood in Texas and Kansas, which is very apparent in her new book we are chatting about today, The Chicken Sisters. Welcome, KJ.
Thank you for having me.
Our first question is always the same. What does it mean to you to be feminist?
Well, you know, the basics that, why, yes, I do believe that women should be paid exactly the same as men and have the same experience and have the same, you know, offers and expectations and opportunities. Absolutely, 100%. If you don't, what are you? So yeah, that's the fundamental part. And I think that the secondary part is, you know, am I willing to step up and say so at every opportunity? Do I get angry when those things don't happen? And in my particular part, as someone who has spent a lot of time writing about family and family policy and child rearing and parenting, does it super annoy me that we live in a society that is so structured to squash women down by putting all of those responsibilities on them? Yes. Yes, it does.
Mm-hmm. Parenthood is political.
Parenthood is absolutely political.
Yeah. And I think we don't realize that. I'm not a parent, so I'm speaking on behalf of parents everywhere, speaking for you all.
Well, the pandemic has really sort of pulled the top of the oyster sardine can or something off on that, right? Not that most of us didn't already know it, but now you just can't question that issues of childcare and school and school timing and you know, how those things work, those are fundamental to the functioning of our society and our economy. We've just been pretending for a really long time that they're not.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what family dynamics and family roles look like on the other side of this. I will be interested to see how that develops and continues to develop. So let's shift gears. I'm so grateful for The Chicken Sisters, your book. I will say I was in isolation due to a COVID exposure when I read this, and it was everything I needed. I was anxious as hell. And I just needed a book that was going to immerse me in something fun and lighthearted and just a page turner without being like a thriller. It's just fun. It is a fun family romp. So, and also I have to say, My next question is, you drew a little masked chicken on my copy.
I did.
How cute are you is my question. That is the cutest conversation.
I'm super cute. I'm super cute. Absolutely.
So thank you for that. So tell us about The Chicken Sisters.
The Chicken Sisters is the story of two sisters raised in a small town in Kansas. They were raised by a mother who runs one of two competing fried chicken restaurants in the town. The fried chicken restaurants have been feuding for absolutely generations. People from one family aren't even allowed in the restaurant for the other. So these sisters are raised by their mom. She's a single mom. She's got her mental health struggles. They've got a pretty tough life together. They really raise each other. But when they get older, they make super different choices. One of them sheds the small town, flees to Brooklyn, sort of leaves her entire identity and everything behind, actually really does hide who she is and how she grew up, creates this life for herself as a New York City influencer. She's got adorable children. She's got an Instagram account. She's got all the things. The other one marries the son of the competing fried chicken restaurant and into a much more solid family, or that is her plan. She's looking to have the small town life that they really kind of did not grow up with. But unfortunately, she's widowed a few years into it. So she ends up a widowed mother of two kids running a fried chicken restaurant with her mother-in-law, which is not at all what she had planned. So she is the one who reaches out to Food Wars, the family, the reality TV competition, and asks them to come and do a competition between her mother's restaurant and her mother-in-law's restaurant. And all this to her is going to solve their financial problems, maybe give her the opportunity to get out from under the chicken restaurant, do something a little bit different. But to her mother, it is an opportunity to bring her other daughter home. And to her New York sister, it suddenly becomes an opportunity to get her career back because she loses her job right as all of this is beginning. So that's where it all starts. And then what we end up with are these two sisters that are going to compete on behalf of the two different fried chicken restaurants. But really what they're competing about is which of them made the right life choices and which of them can do everything better because they're sisters and that's what sisters do.
Ugh, it is so good.
Thank you. That's so what I wanted. I love a story where, you know, there's lots of fun and excitement and family conflict. And I love it when you get some Hollywood and you get some back of the business scenes. I love restaurant stuff. I love all of those things. Yeah. And I really want to get scooped up in a story too. So thank you for saying that I managed to pull it off because this definitely was the goal.
It's what I needed during these unprecedented times. How sick are you of that word? So where did this whole story, this chicken restaurant family feud, what inspired this? Why did you go this route?
So there are actually two competing fried chicken restaurants in a small town in Kansas where my folks grew up. It's actually two sort of neighboring small towns, but they're right on top of each other, Pittsburgh and Kansas. Those restaurants are Chicken Annie's and Chicken Mary's, and anybody from southeastern Kansas or Oklahoma or Missouri, right in that little four-state corner, anybody's going to know them. It's crazy that there are these two. They were completely different. They must be related in some distant fashion because otherwise, why, right? But I do not know how. At some point while I was writing this, my mom was like, do you want me to tell you the real story of Chicken Mary's and Chicken Annie's? And I was like, no, don't do that. That is a terrible idea. Absolutely 100% do not do that. So they share a little bit of history. Chicken Annie's and Chicken Mary's, that part of Kansas is rooted in the coal mines. So the coal mining history, which is like the teeny weeny part of this, that's true. And yeah, so that's where the sort of initial idea came from, was just those restaurants sticking in my head from when I was very, very tiny of why would there be both of them? There has to be a story there. So at some point I just made one up.
I love that. And one of the things that I really appreciate about this book too is the generous sounds condescending, but I can't think of a better word at the moment, but a generous portrayal of small town life and rural living and rural environments. I grew up in a small town, so I feel like I can say that. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if that was a goal of yours setting out, that you wanted to create a small town environment that's really lovely, that's really, it kind of goes against a lot of the stereotypes in quote unquote flyover states. Again, as a resident of a flyover state, I feel like I say that.
Yes. And yeah, I've used that. I use that phrase too. And it's an awful one, but yeah, I mean, I grew up in Texas and Kansas. I was the May. I left for New York. And then the other piece of that is that Amanda realizes that there's life outside the small town, and May realizes that, you know, what she was running away from was not bad. I don't think I'm giving anything away by saying that's sort of where they are. So, and that's kind of me. I left Kansas and Texas, although I didn't grow up in small towns, went to New York, lived there for many, many years. And now I live in a teeny tiny town in New Hampshire, admittedly, not in the Midwest. There are about 1,600 of us. We literally go to town meeting and vote by raising our hands. It's crazy and wonderful. And yeah, I wanted to show that is a part of life in the Midwest, because you get books set in, you know, cute small towns in New England. Absolutely. Cute small towns in the South. Oh, they abound. The South must be full of cute small towns, right? Or in England, like, but you don't get them in the Midwest. People don't. It's like they don't think that existed. So yeah, absolutely. I really did set out to make the town the desirable and wonderful thing that a small town can be. It is a much smaller town in my book than the one where the real Chicken Annies and Chicken Marys are. I should say that Pittsburgh is quite it's a large-ish city in Kansas.
Pittsburgh, Kansas.
Yeah. Yeah. Pittsburgh, Kansas. And I might add, went to college in Manhattan, Kansas. So.
What is that? Is that K-State or is that?
That's K-State.
Okay.
Stop you before you get that one wrong.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I'm kidding.
From the Northern Midwest, we but still a football family. So yes. I understand. I want to talk more about the sisters, Amanda and May. What are the things that you mentioned? May runs off to the big city and tries to like leave her past behind. She's this influencer. As someone who dabbles in book influencing, I am so interested in maybe the research that you did, or if there was somebody or kind of an archetype that you based May off of. Why did you go this route with that character in particular?
Well, I guess a little bit like you, I dabble in influence. You know, I spent many years as a columnist at the New York Times, so it has a certain number of people that are going to know who I am when I'm on social media, but not that many. I guess the truth is that I felt like I did have a choice, because I was a part of the New York Times from 2012 to 2017. And part of that job was to create a social media presence for the column that I was writing, and also for myself. And I felt like at some point, I had little kids. They are cute. We live on a farm, you know, like I felt like I could have gone the route of, no, like, look, this is my great, lovely life, and actively made a choice not to, because I don't think I could have sustained that. Like, that is just not me. So a part of me is always left wondering, well, who does sustain that? And I keep writing about that. I have to admit that my next book has that even more heavily. But with May, I really wanted to show somebody who thought that was everything, like really thought if I create that, then I'll have that, right? Like I'll build that illusion. And she doesn't think of it as an illusion. She just wants to, she has a great life and she wants to show it, but she gets really caught in what it is that she wants to show people. Like she really wants her life to reflect it. And it's messing her up. Like it's not, and it doesn't work. That's the other thing. You can pretend to be somebody else on social media for a certain amount of time, but eventually, and we're seeing this over and over again, it catches up to people. They get tired of it. I just read something yesterday. I don't even know who the influencer was, but it was somebody saying, I've been off Instagram for months. I must have followed them because I just couldn't do it in the pandemic. I just couldn't make everything look cute. And I was like, whoa, I mean, I get you. Who can make things look cute right now? So anyway, yes, I was super fascinated by that. And I too love to read books in which an influencer discovers that it is maybe not all that. Maybe that's, and who knows, maybe real influencers, it is all that. It's all every bit as great as it looks, but we don't want it to be. So let's look at the other kinds of books.
It's been popping up. I mean, I think obviously as more and more people realize that being an influencer is possibly a career, it's been
It totally is.
It's been cropping up as kind of a subgenre of books recently.
It's true. Too.
And I'm here for it. Like, I want to read more of those.
Yes.
And it reminds me of your New York Times essay, Why I Didn't Answer Your Email, and how parenthood, again, these sisters both have children, and how that kind of influences their decisions of how they portray May, how she portrays herself online, and when she asks for help and when she doesn't. And I think that there's a type of motherhood that gets crafted online mm-hmm. that what you were saying isn't what real parenthood looks like. Can you talk a little bit about how maybe that shows up in The Chicken Sisters?
Yeah. I mean, there's sort of two really big online kinds of having, especially small children, right? There's the, they are perfect or they are not perfect, but imperfect in cute ways. We live in a attractively messy house and we make Play-Doh and cook together all of the time. And that is certainly a piece, I think, of, you know, everybody's life has a piece of that. And then there's the other, you know, there's the, oh, it's all awful. And I just need a drink and we're tortured and things are so hard. That's the other way of talking about it. Anyway, May certainly falls into the first category. And Amanda, on the other hand, that's the other sister. She's never even thought about like being on social media with her kids. Although she now follows May sort of in that angry way, I think that many of us follow influencers where she's just like, it's not really like that. Stop that. Like she's hate watching.
Yeah. It's almost as she wants to expose May for being a fraud.
Definitely a little bit. And I think we all have a little bit of that when we look at, you know, other people's pretty lives online, as much as we'd be sad with no pretty lives to look at. You know, I don't want to be too hard on the people that create those for us because it is fun. You love watching it and you love hating it, right?
Exactly.
That's the social commentary of our time.
And it reminds me of reality television. And there is at the heart of this book is this reality, like Food Network-esque competition mm-hmm. that they're filming, they're behind the scenes. And one of the choices that you made that I just love was the producer said, you know, at any time we might be recording and you've basically signed away your rights and privacy for the next 5 days. Yeah. And so we get great drama. Tell me about your choice to bring in the chaos of a reality television program.
Oh, I had to pit everybody against each other, right? That's just what's happening. And these families have been feuding for years. The sisters have they're really at odds. The mother and the mother-in-law have a history that just goes way back. And we needed to boil it, I guess. It needed to throw it all into a boiling pan. And that's what reality TV shows are like, the magnifying lens that just lights up everything underneath them. And also then you get somebody whose interest is not, I think from a sort of writing fiction perspective, the joy of a reality TV show is that you get somebody involved here who has a strong interest in making people do stupid things. And if books in which the characters just happily make all the right choices, those are often not fun to read because
boring.
Yeah, totally boring. I mean, sometimes you can create this fantastic structure, and I've seen it done and I envy it, where the characters are forced to make bad decisions, even though they're behaving as adults. And those are really pleasant to read because it's fun to read about people who are not doing dumb things. Although my characters are doing dumb things right and left. But yeah, so that's the great thing. A reality TV show brings in somebody who's like, okay, please, you know, I know that you hate your sister secretly, but I would like you to say that openly, sort of thing. And that's what reality TV producers, at least some of them, you know, that's their bread and butter, right?
Yeah, the producer is so manipulative. I love her so much.
I loved writing her. She was super fun.
So I have to ask, I imagine that the research for writing about reality television was really difficult.
Oh yeah, it's terrible. You have to watch it. You have to read people's memoirs about being on it. It's terrible and arduous. I definitely don't recommend it. I had a teeny tiny infinitesimally small reality TV show brush, which was that, like, that must have been 20 years ago, and it was going to be a reality TV show about surprise parties. I do not think that it ever got aired. Like, I don't think it ever progressed beyond the first few episodes of filming. But anyway, I get invited to this as a surprise party, and they're going to film it for this reality TV show. And so I had the experience of the producer and the cameras and everything, and everyone, and then being like, okay, now come through the door again. No. All right, go back out, come back in and greet her again. So I knew that it worked that way. I'd seen that our episode would never have aired even if it became a reality TV show, because the person that was supposed to be surprised got trapped at an airport in Denver. So,
oh no.
Yeah. Never even showed up for the party.
Terrible television.
Yeah. So I think they were like creating this whole drama around, well, you know, quick, call the person who was creating the thing and do this and do that. It was funny to see them try to like pull a story out of a surprise party with no guest.
Oh my gosh. So do you have any other reality TV that informed this, or that you love to watch, or that you love to hate watch?
Hate watch. Oh, I will watch a lot of it. I don't watch a lot of it just because I would not stop. But if you put me on a plane and you put like The Real Housewives, I like everything like that, where, you know, people are both who they are in real life and they're doing this reality TV show. There's one, like there's a reality, a Real Housewife. She's also an author and like Kennedy adjacent, and Carolyn, it starts with a B. I don't remember her last name. Anyway, I can watch her on The Real Housewives for hours, because I'm sitting there the whole time going, why are you doing this? Like, what made this seem like a good idea to you? You have, you know, she was a war reporter, for goodness sakes, and now she's a real housewife. She didn't last very long. It was only a couple of seasons, but I went way deep down a rabbit hole at some point of, does she ever say why she did this? It fascinates me.
That is fascinating. So on top of all of this, the shenanigans that is reality television and fried chicken, which is still at its heart, there's fried chicken. The characters do deal with a lot. And yeah. I mean, you mentioned that Amanda, one of the sisters, is a young widow. There are some psychological issues that are happening, you know, childhood trauma from the sister's background. And still, this isn't a quote-unquote issue book. This isn't rip your heart out book. This is witty and lighthearted and fun, but still approach these difficult topics are approached with such love.
Oh,
and
thank you.
What is your kind of perspective on writing difficult topics into a lighthearted novel?
I think, you know, as an editor, I mostly edited essays. And the magic of an essay is typically that it starts out with, I thought one thing, and then this thing happened to me, which it can be a sad thing, it can be a funny thing, it can be a difficult, you know, it can be all kinds of things, it can be a scary thing. And then I thought something different. There, I have just, that's how to write an essay in 9 words or less. So I really spent a lot of time reading and working with writers as they found that I thought one thing and then I thought another thing. And what I saw through all of those years was really all of us struggling to figure out what it is that's going to make us happy. And that should be totally obvious, right? Because if you don't know, who on earth is gonna know? But the truth is that even when our lives are pretty good and things are rocking along, and or we're in the middle of shenanigans or we're doing exciting things or whatever, that's really what we're almost always trying to figure out is, well, what in this situation will make me happy? Like, what do I want to do that is gonna feel good later? And why on earth can I not just do that thing? Because if I don't know, then who knows? Why is this so hard? So that's really at the root of the story, is that both Amanda and May have made life choices that they thought would make them happy, and they're not. And they can't quite figure out why. And I think a lot of us find ourselves there over and over and over again. It's not necessarily gut-wrenching tragedy, that moment. It's just a moment that we go through. So I feel like it just ended up at the heart of the story.
Yeah. It was really relatable, dealing with everything and still trying to maintain a life and seek purpose and have relationships and make them work in ways that don't suck.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much it. And recognizing too that a lot of figuring that out is just making a choice to be happy around what you're doing, that you can always be striving for more watchers or you know, a bigger role in a reality TV show or whatever. But probably the thing that's actually going to change your outlook on life the most is your own outlook on life.
Amen. Amen. Seems simple, never is.
Never, never, never.
So I got some news in my inbox right before we finalized our chat here that this was Reese Witherspoon's December book club pick.
Yes, that was super exciting.
How has that experience been for you?
That is amazing. Any author will tell you that that is the fairy dust of the moment. It's just, I mean, there aren't words. It really lifts a book into something that a lot of people are going to see. It's a great opportunity. And I'm so grateful. And it was so unexpected. Like I literally had a conversation at one point. So when you write a book, people will tell you a lot of super people, your friends and your family, like they want to help you. So one of my friends called me up and she's like, "Do you know that Reese Witherspoon has a book club?" And I was like, "Oh, yeah, I did know that. Thanks." It's like saying, "Did you know Oprah has a book club?" It's, you know, it's exactly like that. That's exactly what I was like. Yeah, I knew that. She said, "You should make sure she got your book." I'm like, pretty sure that they'll do that. I don't really have any control over that one, but that's so sweet. You're right. She totally, you know, and I didn't give it another minute's thought until my editor called me, and just I honestly thought she was calling me to tell me that they were going to COVID the book, and they were like, "We just can't, sorry, we've changed our minds completely, #2020 because why would she call me, right? No, that was, yeah, it was great news. It was super exciting.
How early on did you find out? I'm so curious about, especially Reese, how she fit. She does her whole thing.
You definitely find out a little bit in advance. I wrote them an essay. We did all kinds of things. You know, they want you to be ready. They have to put, I mean, realistically, they have to put the little seal on the book. So, you know, they have to do it a few weeks ahead of time before the books all start getting printed.
Yeah. I have a secret feud with Reese Witherspoon. She doesn't know it.
She's your nemesis.
She's low-key my nemesis. But there have been several times where I have been in contact with authors and then they get selected as Reese's picks, and then their schedule just gets bananas and they can't fit me in anymore. And so I'm so grateful.
My schedule did not get super bananas. I think it's because it's holiday, because it's the holidays, maybe, or maybe, you know.
But I've been lucky to have some of her authors on the show. Last question before we go to our softballs and wrap up. How do you think this book is feminist?
How do I think this book is feminist? This is about two women really making their own choices. Absolutely. They have both been super influenced by expectations. In one case, by what she thinks the world expects of her, and the other by what she thinks her family, and in fact, her dead husband would have expected to her. They've both really been conforming their lives to those expectations. And in this book, they really find a way to free themselves from them. And I think that's deeply feminist.
Absolutely. Is liberation not the ultimate goal of feminism? Yeah.
Yeah. Liberation from ourselves. I mean, we are often the ones that put those expectations in our own minds. And that is the hardest, you know, you can kick down the glass ceiling as much as you want to, but when it's in your head, it's hard to get past. So getting through the barriers that we set up for ourselves, that's part of what we got to do.
Well, I absolutely loved this book. Like I said, it was just exactly what I needed at an anxious moment. We do have a couple of quick questions as we wrap up, but is there anything that we missed that you wanted to make sure we touch on today?
No, this was great. Thanks.
Super. So my first question is, do you have any books that you would recommend to our audience that's not your own?
Oh, absolutely. I have so many. Don't even get me started. I like you, I'm a bookstagrammer. Like all over. You can find me at KJDA on Bookstagram, and I'm constantly recommending. I have 12 days of books to give going right now. So my most recent favorites, if you love romance and you want it to be feminist and angry and yet super fun and also juicy, I love Serena Bowen's The Company series. I just finished her latest. It's Lover Boy. This is a serious romance genre. So you gotta be a romance genre reader to go for it. But oh, so good. So much fun. You know, billionaire tech secrets. It's actually, I would have called it maybe even a little bit of a thriller as well as a romance, but it's definitely romance. You know, ex-hockey players. This one's got a coffee shop in it. Who can resist that? Anyway, so that was super fun. I also recently read The Other Bennett Sister. And if you are a Jane Austen fan, this is an absolute must. It's Mary Bennett's story. I didn't even realize Mary Bennett needed a story, but now Mary Bennett may be my favorite Bennett. She's, you know, she had so much going against her, and she still, in this book at least, manages to find her way to a really super fun, happy ending. And the fun piece of that, if you're a Pride and Prejudice fan, is that Pride and Prejudice takes place in the background during the first third of the book. So every so often you sort of pop out into Pride and Prejudice, and Mary says one of the lines, that the annoying, super awful lines that she says during Pride and Prejudice, but now you know why. And it's so good.
I love that.
That's a must read. Yeah.
All right. So Lover Boy.
Yeah, totally, totally different.
And who's the author of The Other Bennett Sister?
We'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah. So those will be in the show notes. The Chicken Sisters will be in the show notes. And in the show notes, where can we find you on the internet if we want to connect further?
The best place is Instagram at KJDA. I'm also on Facebook at KJ Dell'Antonia. Really, KJDell'Antonia.com will get you everywhere. And the great thing is, if you just kind of start trying to spell it, if you just go KJ Dell and you kind of, then probably your computer will fill it in. It's the advantage of having kind of an unusual name.
Yeah, no kidding. Great work.
Yeah. Thanks, Mom and Dad.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I just loved this book. I love starting out my day with this conversation with you, and I wish you nothing but the best going into the new year.
This was so fun. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to today's show. As always, a rating and review in the podcast app of your choice goes a long way in supporting feminist media. We'd love to have you join the Feminist Book Club subscription box, a community-driven subscription box which features a book of the month and products from women and queer-owned businesses delivered directly to your doorstep. This is an easy way to vote with your dollars, as you'll be supporting this podcast, small women and queer-owned businesses, and the charity beneficiary of the month, which receives 5% of total sales. Use code PODCAST for a discount on any subscription package. Learn more about the box and get the show notes for today's episode at feministbookclub.com. See you next time.
A well-read woman is a dangerous creature.